Wait a minute, this sounds like rock and or roll.
Guest is my friend Daryl, aka Caleb Frade, and the way we met was this crazy cassette. It's so funny, the cassette label thing was like a couple of years right before the internet, and so now it just seems so antiquated and unnecessary. Everything that we had to go through back then, we were actually pen pals.
Yeah, you know?
We wrote letters back and forth, and everything was in the mail. There wasn't even email or anything.
And, ink, paper, tape.
And it was before you could make your own CDs even. So everything was cassette tape still. So I'm trying to think of what year it was when we first... It was probably 94? 95?
Yeah. Yeah, one of those two.
Yeah. Well, I was at a record store in Chicago. I'm not sure which one. And at the counter, when I went up to buy whatever I was buying, there was a little display of Shrimper cassettes. And the way I've always been, I was going to buy one just because I'll check out anything. So I looked at those Shrimper cassettes and I ended up buying the Mountain Goats, the Hound Chronicles, it was called. Had no idea what it was. At the time, the Mountain Goats only existed on cassette tapes. You know, there was nothing. I mean, it's crazy. Now the Mountain Goats, I mean, he's been on WTF with Marc Maron. They played the Mountain Goats on Walking Dead. You know, he got pretty famous. But at the time, it was just that tape that I bought was recorded on a boombox. Most of his early stuff was on a boombox where you could hear, you know, when you were recording on a boombox like that with the built-in mic, you could hear the sound of the gears, or you could hear the rumble of the tape actually turning. You know, you could hear the mechanism.
Now, let them kill me.
guess the tape was like $3.99 maybe.
Yeah, the Shrimper tape I bought. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't remember how much it was, but I just looked through those tapes and I was like, I'm just going to buy one of these and just, you know, see what it is because it looked interesting.
Yeah.
My friend went to the University of Chicago and we went back to his dorm and we put it on and I loved it. It's just a guy in an acoustic guitar singing crazy songs. I was really into it. And so that led me to writing a letter to Shrimper because the address for the label, they were in Washington. Were they in California or Washington, yep. Shrimper?
California. Yeah. Upland, California.
Upland, California. Right. And so the address is on the tape. So I wrote to Shrimper. He sent me a catalog that was Dennis Kalachi that ran Shrimper. He probably, somehow I found out there were more cassette labels than Shrimper. And eventually what I would do is everyone I would write to, I'd say, can you tell me anybody else to write to? And it just kind of snowballed, you know, and I would just write to any cassette label and everybody would just trade tapes. And it turned into this whole network. And then you were one of the people that I probably got to you from Bobby J, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know how I got to Bobby J. Bobby J was in, what was he in Austin?
Yeah, Austin, Texas.
Todd Ledford, I remember. And I really liked a lot of the stuff that he sent me. And he was pretty cool. And he was nice to me. He sent me letters and sent me a bunch of tapes and told me other people to write to. That's at some point I wrote to you. And then your songs, your tapes turned out to be my favorites of all the cassette labels stuff. And then we ended up just becoming friends. And, you know, actually, when I ended up moving to Austin and all those times you came and visited us when we lived in New York. And I just saw you posted a picture at the Statue of Liberty the other day, which is, what was it? It was February 2001. So, yeah.
Yep. That was when we stayed there. Pretty sure that's, yeah.
You came out a few times, and I answered the door most of the times when you came to New York.
You didn't know any better. Well, funny thing about how I discovered Shrimper, I was already, you know, I was into Sebado already. And I wrote Lou Barlow and like his girlfriend at the time wrote me back. And then I wrote back again and asked her if she had like anything just like, and I didn't care. I was like, do you have anything like, you know, like from his house or is like anything personal? Or I was just looking for any sort of like something that was his
a
or
souvenir.
Something she would, a souvenir. Yeah, yeah. Just a little trinket.
Yeah.
And so then I was like, and so she wrote me back that she had a Shrimper tape. That she would sell me like autograph for $20, and then I didn't know what she was talking about. So then I asked Steve. I was like, "What's a Shrimper tape?" And then Steve was like, "I think that's like some sort of foot fetish, like video or whatever." So I'm like, "What? This chick's gonna send us like a foot fetish video, like her and Lou Barlow doing?" And it's autographed. Like that's especially weird. And he was like, that's what I think it is, shrimping. And I was like, and then we just, I don't even think we had the internet to check yet at that point.
No.
So we were just like going from Steve's head. And I was like, so I sent her $20.
For an autographed foot fetish.
Yeah, like you can't go wrong. I mean, either this is going to be the weirdest thing you ever got from an artist, you know.
Sebato.
Yeah. So that was, and then of course she didn't write back.
She just kept her $20.
I guess maybe I didn't send the money. I don't know, but I did write her back, and she didn't write me back. Maybe I needed to confirm it before. Then I didn't. And I guess that offended her. Maybe she never wrote back, so we didn't get that. Actually, I'm lying. We got the video of Lou Barlow and her doing all kinds of crazy. No, I'm just kidding. But how we found out about, but that wasn't how I was just, I like Sebado. So that was all, I ended up seeing the Shrimper tapes at my local record store too, Sound Exchange, where, Bliss Blood worked, you know, from the Pain Teens, but they had Shrimper tapes there. And the first one I think I bought was Pawn Shop Reverb. No, it was a Sebado one. It was one of those, It was whatever that first one was. Oh, Acoustic Centrado or whatever. Uh-huh. I think it was the one. So that was the one I bought, but that wasn't, I didn't really even associate that. I don't remember what came first, that or when we actually got involved in the tape world, how we got involved, and it was
Can I butt in? I just Googled it, and shrimping on Urban Dictionary to suck on someone's toes for sexual gratification. I want to know how Steven knew that.
John Waters.
All right.
There you go. John Waters.
He was right. So, anyways. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Brilliant. Like, he was so into feet back in those days. He's graduated now. He's like, We won't. What are you into now, Steve? Bridget, maybe you can answer. I'm famous for your stuff. You guys make videos? Well, at any rate, so how I found about the tape world was through Phil. Phil is, you know, like, we were all, before the whole tape world, we had a little scene going down here. It was just like a bunch of us in Spring, Texas, in the Klein, Texas area. And we were just all doing our little stuff. We'd go to this open mic night, and then we'd play like the VFW, and then we'd play these little Earth Day festivals and just different things that were going on. Albert had a band, Ghost Sonata. There was another Ghost Sonata band from Cleveland, but so he, you know, when he found out about that, he was annoyed, but I had a band, Nappy Grunge, with this guy, Richard. And then there was another band called Face Chord that was really good. And just a whole bunch of other people, Roach Leg. I don't even remember all of them. There were so many of them. Groovin' with Turtle. I had a band with this girl called Peyote Siblings. Anyway, this is the whole thing. And then Phil and Albert did something called Secret Shares. And anyway, so we would all make all these, you know, we'd play all these little open mics and clubs and different places. And then Ghost Sonata ended up breaking up. My band broke up. I tried joining Face Chord, which was a disaster because I wasn't as good as the other guy for singing their type music. And so eventually everyone moves away. People go to Austin or wherever they go. And so it was just me. And actually, Phil started a band with Albert's old bandmates in Austin called, what are they called? I'm just drawing a blank right now. Anyway, whatever. They had a band, and I never even got to see them play, but I heard the shows were just really great because Phil was like, you know, on fire and just like, you know, just, you know, causing mayhem just on the mic and just going crazy, which I would have loved to have seen because he was always, whenever we played live, it was always a disaster. Like, he'd always just tell you, like, that's not how the song goes. No, that's not how it goes. Speed that part up. You know, like, we're playing live right now, you know. And so that was always just awful. Anyway, at some point, like, me, Albert, and Phil were, like, the only people left in town. And so we got together and, you know, formed Ribeye or whatever and just made up some songs. We went to Huntsville one time where Albert was living, and we recorded. And then after that, Phil was in Austin living there with some who knows where and wherever he could stay for a couple days, I guess. And then he calls me up and tells me that we got signed. And of course I knew that there had to be more to that story because I knew that it couldn't be true. And I wondered how much money Phil needed. I don't know. Where it was going. Where does this go? When do I have to pick you up? And how much money do you need? And what else? Let's just cut to the chase. And so it took me like 30 minutes. He tells me that he met this guy, runs Bobby J Tapes, and his name's Todd, and he's wants to sign us to his label. I'm like, what do you mean sign? He goes, what does that mean? Sign. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay. And then eventually I figured it out. Like, if you talked to him long enough, you found out it was like, oh, it's the guy who works at the copy store. And yes. He just gets free copies, and we're not going to get anything.
Yeah, he can make all his fancy tape covers at the while he was at work. Yeah.
Yeah, he worked at some place called Jenny's, and that was where he worked. And so, but I was like, okay, well, you know, he's going to give us, you know, like 20 of our tape or whatever. And I was like, that's fine. I don't care. Yeah. And so funny thing was when I went up there to meet, you know, Todd, you know, Phil's taking me to the headquarters, Bobby J headquarters, and we go upstairs. And then the first person that I see come down is that Azalea Snail chick who was on a split single with Sebado. So I was like, man, this is kind of real. She's on there with Sebado.
Right.
And then that was where the bubble burst after that. But no, I mean, he was, you know, he had all kind, you know, he put out like a million tapes in like a month.
Yeah, I was all excited because he put out that what did he call it? It was all less than a minute. You had to submit songs that were less than a minute long.
Yeah, minute under. Yeah.
Yeah. But so I thought I was famous because I sent him a song that was less than a minute, and yeah, it was out there. And that whole tape, that tape was full of you and Albert and Phil, right? What was it? I can't remember what it was called. Now, mine was what? She Shook My Hand. That was what I sent in. I was pounding on a drum and screaming.
She shook my hand!
I don't know if Shrimper started the whole thing that turned into what it turned into, or I'm not really sure. I guess Shrimper just became the most famous, and it was probably just because of Lou Barlow, right? I had that Lou Barlow tape too from Shrimper. You know, I got the catalog, and that was one of them that I ordered. And you know, people had done cassette stuff before. There's a guy R. Stevie Moore that put stuff out on cassette. There was of course Daniel Johnston, the Stress Records, all the Daniel Johnston's early stuff was on those cassettes. There's also a guy, LMNOP, that he put all his stuff out on cassettes early on.
Yeah, that was sticker like, from that guy.
What? Yeah, yeah. I love that guy. I mean, his stuff's all on CD now, but so there was stuff before Shrimper, but the whole movement or scene or whatever that we were a part of, it seemed like to all revolve around Shrimper.
Yeah, definitely.
They were kind of the biggest.
And I guess you always hear about Liz Phair having out some tape.
Right.
Got famous. But yeah, seemed like Shrimper was the biggest deal in town at the time.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I tried to make a list of all the cassette labels that I was in touch with. And there was Union Pole, Cats of Plate. Cats of Plate, I think, was in Pennsylvania, right? I don't remember where Union Pole was.
Yeah, Swarthmore.
There was a Slab Co., which I had a Creeper Lagoon tape from them that I loved, and
those last two are both in the northwest, up like Portland or Seattle or something. They're all up there, or Eugene or something.
There was a guy in Chicago named Jim Demke who I really liked his stuff. He called his stuff Zero Series, and his label was Ex Parte. Here's what we do: we lift the beam, lift the beam. Try not to drop it, try not to get beans, not to get beans. Lift it out over the lake, lift it out over the chain of lakes. Lift it out over the lake where they're excavated. Here's what they do, they color us in. Color us in, color us using the color of tin, color of tin. Coloring over the lake, coloring over the chain of lakes, coloring over the lake where they're excavated. Thank you. Of course, I started my label. I started mine cassette label Amateur Anarchy, and I put out a tape by him. That was what was so fun about. I mean, what was funny is, I'm sure it was probably the same for everybody. I was making my own tapes with my own label before I even knew about all the cassette labels. So it was just kind of, oh, I'm going to just throw my hat in the ring here. But I was already doing it on my own, just in my own fantasy world. So, Except when I started my label, I called it Asswipe, and then when I went professional, I changed it to Amateur Anarchy.
Got professional.
yeah.
Good save.
Yeah, there was a label called Squirrel Energy Now. Do you remember that one?
Oh yeah.
What was Squirrel Energy Now? I don't remember.
That guy was named Adam. Okay. I'm thinking Svensson was his last name. I'm not exactly sure. Him and Ed Gray came down here for one of our fest one time.
Okay. I have an Ed Gray tape, yeah.
Yeah, Box Boy. That's his name.
That's Box Boy. All right. Yeah. Yeah, I love my favorite thing on that. We were talking about that 1 minute or less compilation. My favorite thing on there was Box Boy. It's called Young Girls Spit.
There's no need to throw a fit. Got it right upstairs, do you want to look at it? It's the essence of a young girl's spit. Got it in a jar, do you want to look at it? It all comes down to what you want to do with it. Cast a spell and destroy some.
I always love
that. Yeah, he played that live at Heatherfest 1 year. Or no, Flagfest. We have a Flagfest tape that we put out, and he played. That's one of the songs he does on there. He dedicates to me.
I love that song, but I forgot he was the Squirrel Energy Now guy. All right.
Yeah. We got t-shirts. He had t-shirts. They were fun. They traveled through and they're on that. And George Willard shot a film, David Craig or whatever, shot a video that it's, you know, him and George, it's him and, you know, George Willard and, or Box Boy, George Willard and Ed Gray driving around the country.
Okay.
Have you seen that before?
No, I haven't. Yeah. That's, I think I have a tape that has Box Boy on one side and Ed Gray on the other. Is that what it is?
Well, this was a video I saw. So, yeah, no, I mean, they must have been hustling that while they were driving around, I guess. I didn't get a copy of that.
No, I never saw that video. Another one was Sing Unix. Sing Unix was in Nebraska, I think, right?
I think so, yeah.
And that was Simon Joyner was on that, who I don't know how famous Simon Joyner is, but he's somebody who had some kind of a name.
Girl likes to smoke.
expensive like a skinny Buddha. She said most men are colorblind, it's a genetic deficiency. But if you guess the color of my eyes, I might love you. And your lips are elastic, cause you're so sarcastic. Who do you think you are, boy, H.L. Mencken? No, I'm Lazarus the Lucky, call me Lucky Lazarus. I just suffered from chronic, meager, post-high school enthusiasm. To the relief of my tear ducts, and she took the straw to my cherry coke and sucked the tear off my cheek. That's love to me. It occurs every day in urban Burger Kings, even if it's temporary.
But I remember I ordered a Sing Unix t-shirt, and then Simon Joyner came through Madison and played at OK's Corral, and I went to his show wearing the Sing Unix shirt, and he was just such a weirdo that it's like he wasn't even interested when I tried to talk to him. He was not real friendly. I think, and then so Conor Oberst was part of the Sing Unix thing, I think, right? I think one of his tapes was on Sing Unix.
Maybe so. I don't know. The first thing I had with him on it was on an unread record.
Oh, yeah, Conor Oberst had three tapes on three different labels, I think, and I had two of them, and those ended up being worth a shitload of money. I sold them for a couple hundred bucks, I think, on eBay. But so he's got to be the person that came out of this scene that we're talking about that became the most famous.
He was definitely. And I remember. When I got that, I was on a record with him, and I got a copy from Unread from Chris Fisher, and you know, then after that he was, you know, super famous, and then someone told me that those records go for, you know, so much because there's so few, so I started thinking about selling it, but I can't because it's my only copy.
yeah, you're actually on a record with him, yeah. Yeah, those tapes he made when he was like 12 or 13. And so when I got him, I thought it was a girl because the name is kind of androgynous, C-O-N-O-R. Uh-huh. And it sounded like a female artist. So until Bright Eyes came out, I still remember my friend Chris was talking about Bright Eyes, and it was Conor Oberst. And I was like, that's a guy? Because I thought it was a girl.
Should be in Sweden, my friend, yeah.
some of the other labels I wrote down, Car and Car Disco Product, that was one. I just know they had a Mountain Goats tape, but that, do you remember that label? They would send the tapes out in like these weird plastic cases that you could like hang on a rack.
That's Furniture Hushley.
See, you know this stuff better than I do even.
Yeah, he's still hanging around.
Yeah, I saw Union Pool. All the Union Pool tapes are on Bandcamp.
Where you could, yeah, it was like free or cheap or something.
Yeah, they have they just have two tracks, side one and side two of I think all the Union Pool tapes are on there. And
it's just all.
Yeah,
you just have to listen to them in order.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And there was a. Did you know the guy Squim? I think his label is called Circle X. I think.
Oh, I remember that name, but I don't really.
He was out by Seattle, I think.
You can eat shit off the floor. Things seem to change cause no one cares anymore. You can scream yourself to death. You can eat shit off the floor. Nothing seems to change cause no one cares anymore. Goodbye to the days when you were righteous and mean, and I was so unclean that I made you seem pure. Now we're so tired and we're so unsure. Everything seems gross through my glasses. You can scream yourself to death. You can eat shit off the floor. No one seems to care. Nothing changes anymore. You can scream yourself to death. You can eat shit off the floor. Nothing seems to change because no one cares anymore.
Charlie McAllister, and that he had a label called Flannel Banjo, and I guess I don't know, he became pretty well known. He seemed to release a tape on almost every one of these labels practically.
Oh yeah, he's on all the different comps people put out and stuff.
Everybody liked him in the whole scene. It seemed like everybody was into his stuff.
That was the first one I discovered when I was like, when Todd gave me a bunch of tapes from Bobby J, I was like,
right,
found one of those out there, you know. I was like, that one struck me the most at that point.
Yeah.
So I wrote him, and then he wrote me back, and then it was, you know, we've just been writing back and forth ever since, you know.
Yeah, I recently found a couple of, I still have a couple of his shirts. I haven't any Sea Legs shirt, and I have another one too.
Ooh, I'm jealous.
They're just screen printed. They're both yellow shirts that he screen printed on. They're pretty cool.
Saved up my money and plans to go traveling were bubbling inside me. But she lied through her teeth to me, and her smile was so weak to me. And she lied to me again and again. roller coaster I was riding on went down, down, down. And the roller coaster I was riding on went down, down, down. And sometimes you learn the hard way. Sometimes you learn the hard way. I was riding on way down, down, down. And sometimes you learn the hard way, yeah. Sometimes you learn the hard way. Sometimes you learn the hard way, yeah. Sometimes you learn the hard way. And the roller coaster I was riding on way down, down, down. And the roller coaster I was riding on way down, down.
Yeah, I could talk all day about Charlie. Jesus.
Yeah, I know. Very a real character.
Yeah, I could talk.
I never met him. I never met him. He was supposed to come to that.
You never met him?
No, he was supposed to be at that one show that we did at Albert's at the Lake House, and then he didn't show up. He never got there. And that was the one time I would have met him.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. I thought he maybe one year he didn't make it, but I thought maybe he came the next day or. Oh, you were he didn't make it at all? I know one time he had car problems, and I thought he just came like the next day or something. But maybe you guys left, or maybe that was another time. I don't really remember, but we ended up the first time I met, you know, like he, you know, we had made that Rebel Airs tape, me and Albert, and so. Yeah, he wrote me back. The first letter I got from him was like, "We're jamming all the way up to Swarthmore, listening to Rebel Airs." So then we started writing back and forth, and then within a year, like me and Steve traveled out to Charleston and played a show with him, like, you know, 96 or something, whatever. I don't know what year it was. You know, and that was before he had any problems playing shows or any other ideas about shows other than music. At least, you know, he started doing, you know, he's, you know, performance art's a big part of his deal, and he can do cooking as music, straight up, you know, fuck with the audience kind of thing as, you know, a show
fight
or whatever.
Right?
Fight with the audience, you know, but not tell them.
Yeah.
And so the first time, even still though, the first time, you know, he played with like a, we recorded it and released it. It's called Espontaneo. And then the next time he came down, he came to Texas, and then we did a show called Gigathon. So I have both of those on like a videotape. But during the first show, like when I first met him, first, you know, like right after the show, he was fighting with his girlfriend, and he like had a saw, and he like put the saw on his head and like wrapped it around his head and let it go, and like it really hurt his ears. And he was banging his head into the minivan. I don't even know what. It was just crazy.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, the next morning they kissed and made up and were making, you know, crab legs or something and offering us, you know, milk or whiskey. And there's a picture where he's drinking rum or something out of a white boot, and I'm drinking milk out of a white milk jug, you know, like of a picture of us. A couple of the
other labels I remembered, I was talking about the ones
Charlie McAllister. No, I'm just kidding.
The ones that did noise collages were Black Bean and Placenta. Did you know what? And then there was one called Eerie Materials. I think Eerie Materials had something called
Mike Landucci ran the first one. That was
Black Bean and Placenta. Yeah, those were the tapes where they were just the worst quality, right? He would send you a tape, and it was just like a droning noise, and you could hardly even make out what was on it.
And the tape itself would be half broke.
Yeah, that was great. And Eerie Materials was just like, there was something called Everything Eats a Squirrel. I remember.
I don't know. I never heard of them.
It was just noise, I think. It was just like
a
bunch of sounds on a tape.
Yeah. Well, like at some point, like I don't know, probably 98 or 99, like, you're just like, everybody was like, you're just getting all kinds of stuff in the mail. Like, you didn't even, I didn't even know anymore. Yeah. You know, like, any, I couldn't keep up with it. It was just like, you'd get so many tapes from people that I didn't even, like, they're even hard to remember at all now, you know?
Well, I mean, I didn't find a whole lot of stuff that I liked out of it, but the stuff I did like, yeah, you know, it was worth digging to find it, I guess. But,
oh, yeah, yeah. I ended up keeping in touch with almost all the people I really liked, you know?
Yeah.
Ashley Holt being another one.
Yeah, did he have a label or?
No, he was just, well, I mean, he was on Charlie's label on Flannel Banjo.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
First two tapes were, and then I released the tape.
Yeah.
And we did a split tape. And I think at that point, you know, CDs are happening a little bit. And so he started doing the CD baby thing and, you know, doing self-releasing himself at that point, you know.
Yeah, it was only a year or two before a lot of, like, Shrimpers started selling out and putting out vinyl and stuff like that. And, you know, yeah, the whole thing only lasted a few years, probably, really.
It was really, like, 94, 95, or 93, 90, maybe 93, 94, 95, 96. I don't know. Then I guess it tapers off as far as that initial little group of people until, like, the Unread guy.
Yeah.
You know. Takes the torch.
I just got a friend request on Facebook from this kid that looks really young, and he's collecting this shit now.
Like, oh, he's Steven collecting.
Plum? Is that who? Do you know him?
There's two young guys that have been in contact with me. Steven Plummer. He's starting a website that's documenting everything.
Really?
Yeah, and you know he's all obsessed. I mean, he's like. I think he probably has more Charlie McAllister than anybody. Cause he was just like ordering all this stuff, and he ordered a bunch of stuff for me, but I can't, you know, supply stuff when people order it.
Right.
He's also in Ireland. So it's like,
yeah, that's not the guy. That's not the guy. I'm looking on Facebook. There's a guy. He looks like he's probably like 19 or 20. He's got glasses and,
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He sent me a Scott friend request.
Mead. Scott Mead, is that right?
Scott Mead, that sounds right.
Yeah. Yeah, he's all into it, too. I think he might know that guy, Orange Cake Mix guy. I don't know. I've talked to him a little bit, and I don't know if he knows that guy or he just likes his music a lot. You know, Orange Cake Mix?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the guy. I'm looking at his Facebook page. I saw that he sent me a friend request, and I was looking at who is this guy, and then I saw that he has all these pictures of all those tapes, and I was like, oh, I see.
Yeah, those two guys are really into it right now. The next generation.
Could they find a more obscure thing to get into? It's hilarious.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah, so your label, of course, was Doormat, which... You've already mentioned, like, you put out Ashley Holt and Charlie McAllister, and, of course, my label, Amateur Anarchy. I put out your tape, The Family Tree Still Needs Watering, which is
We're
awesome.
Still waiting on our first BJ Camp
Yeah,
Camp
the,
release.
The Doormat like, BJ Camp tape never BJ's. Happened.
It will one day. I'm sure you're still working on it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be a quadruple album.
I've been continuing to get funding from Steve all these years just because he wants to hear that tape so bad. I keep telling him it's coming, and we're gonna be right back in the front pages just like we used to be when, you know, so get on that.
Well, I love, you know, I put out your tape, which means that you sent me a tape and a cover, and I photocopied the covers and dubbed tapes right. If anybody ordered it, and that was called putting it out.
Yeah. Big if. One time I put out, you know, I had those series of, like, compilations, Mind Comps.
Yep.
One, there were five of those or six, I don't know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I don't even know how many there were. I know there were five for sure. There might have been a sixth one.
I was on the last couple.
Yeah. Well, at some point there was this guy in town that was on one, like, I met him through Michelle McGlaw, and she was living at this place, and I would go over to where she lived, and he was hanging out, and she told me how great he is, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Just, we're doing this Zodiac tape, Zodiac Melodiac, where like you, everyone has, you know, that represents their star sign, you know, and then we made a calendar with it. So he sends me this song, and so, and I thought it was pretty cool. And I thought, again, like, you know, we were just talking about how the Bright Eyes guy sounded like he was 12. I thought this was like a 12-year-old girl or whatever, like 12-year-old white girl or something. I knew it was a boy, but I was, but still it was in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
And then it turns out it was like a 35-year-old black man that was totally off. I was totally way off on that. But his song was like, the song didn't really strike that, you know, chord in me. It was just, it sounded like, it was like this guy like talking about his feelings and stuff. And so I met him and I was like, oh, cool. And so anyway, I put out the tape and he was cool with it. He let me put it out, whatever. And then I put out like a, I think the Mein Kampf 5 was like a, some of my favorite songs from different compilations or something. I think I did it different, you know? And I put that song on there. And so he saw it on my website and he like called me, he called my parents and got my phone number from them, called me on my cell phone and told me I needed to take it down off the website. I was like, well, you told me I could use it. And he's like, you're charging $5 for that. I was like, don't worry. No one's ordered it.
Right.
So, and then he was like, well, you need to have that down. You're going to hear from my lawyers. And then I just told him, fuck you, and hung up on him. And then he called my parents and told them what I told him. It was like the most, it was the dumbest thing ever. And so and then I had to get somebody to take it off because I don't know how to do computers.
Yeah.
Hate that guy.
Yeah.
Like I was becoming rich off that one little song of his.
So do you know what Discogs.com is?
I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's a pretty big website. It's getting bigger and bigger. It seems like it's kind of took over where All Music Guide used to be. I mean, you could just go there and you could look up a band's whole discography. And so because I was trying to figure out what some of these tape labels were, I ended up finding that both of us are on Discogs. Like we have a page on there mainly because of compilations we were on. I think you're on there because the unread stuff is on there. And then I'm on there because I was on that one Nearsighted.
He's verifying right now on the computer, on his phone.
Yeah. I'm on the one compilation called a Cheese compilation. I don't remember if you were on that too. And then,
and then
of course I was on the Cactus
Gum.
Steve
Gorman.
Is that what the Cheese compilation was?
Maybe.
And I was on the Cactus Gum. I remember the Cactus Gum compilation. I was so excited because Mo Viola were on there, and I loved that band, and I was on the same tape as them.
Oh, that was a good CD. Yeah, I'm on that one.
Yeah. Chutes and Ladders is the one, yeah. Yeah, that guy, what was that guy's name? Brad Rose. Yeah, wait, we said we weren't going to talk bad about anybody. I wasn't a huge fan of his music.
It's hard not to talk bad about some people. Yeah, Brad Rose.
Yeah, he was Little Jupiter. He had a very strange way that he sang, is what I remember. Well, it kind of seemed like he was making his songs up as he recorded them. I could be wrong, but he put out some cool stuff on his label.
Stunt Doubles, yeah, his name was really good.
Yeah, before he was the Stunt Doubles, he was just John. He came up with a tape where he's just called John. It's called My Horse's Ass is on Fire, something like that. Yeah, I wanted to play a song off that tape called Where the Fireflies Glow because I really like it.
Where the fireflies glow. smells like hell on earth, and bottom's got a rash. You're under stress, you tell me, and you need to take a break. Come on and let's frolic and swim naked in the lake where the fireflies go. Where the fireflies go. Where the fireflies go. Where the fireflies go.
And Brad Rose put out a great Creeper Lagoon tape too, which that's another, that Creeper Lagoon was the guy Sharky, but then they turned it into a band, and he was just a guitar player. He had a different singer, and they turned into a really great band that was pretty much completely different from his cassette label. Yeah, I saw Creeper Lagoon a few times. I really like, I have both their CDs. They're really good, but they were completely different. His cassette label stuff was mainly just acoustic guitar. Just him and
Steve. Steve has a favorite. Let's hear.
He Made Us All Blind. That's a great song.
Yeah, yeah. You know the song Dead Man's Saloon? I love that song. It's from their, I guess they had an EP and then they had two albums, right? I think something like that. But they had a major label record. What the hell is it called? They were really good, but, that was like when he was on the cassette labels, it was just the one guy. And I love it. He had that tape on Slabco where in between the songs, it's like when he would have people in his apartment, he would record them and they didn't know he was recording. And they'd be having conversations. And then at the end, he's talking to this guy. And all of a sudden, the guy's like, "Are you recording this?" And the guy figures out that he's recording it. But yeah, he'd be arguing with his neighbors in the apartment building and stuff and put it on his tapes.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Creeper Lagoon tape that was on Cactus Gum, shit, I'm trying to remember what it was called, but there was a great song in there called Eyes of Hazel.
Don't feel lost, your sins are forgotten. Cross that you carry, you can leave at the door. There's blankets upstairs and sheets made of cotton. Go ahead and make your bed while I sweep up the floor. The caresses are gone and the kisses wasted, the perfume no longer lingers in the air. The sweet touch of love turned bitter when tasted. But it's better to know bitter than to never have care. So try with your eyes of hazel. Make me wish I never kiss the bliss of your one. Life can cut like a razor. Hand me the bandages and I'll be fine. Life
is simple when simple is easy, and easy is hard when hard times come to you. A bottle of gin can make a man feel queasy, but queasy ain't nothing when you're tired and blue. So try, try with your eyes of hazel, make me wish I'd never kiss the bliss of your wine. Life, life can cut like a razor, hand me the bandages and I'll be fine. Have won and the losers have left. Your face is a memory, your choice is a shame. The birds of paradise have flown from their nest. The songs that they sing will never sound the same. So try, try with your eyes of hazel. I'll never kiss the bliss of your wine. Life, life can cut like a razor. Hand me the bandages and I'll be fine.
Also, the Slapcoat tape, I remember it didn't have any song titles. There's like no information on it. It just said Creeper Lagoon and that was it. But there was there were really good songs on that tape too.
Won't you build a fire? Keep the worries cold. Cry about the sweet sound. There's a pillow by the tree. I left it there for you.
So that was one of my favorites of the whole cassette label thing, was the Creeper Lagoon stuff. What else were... I loved... on Bobby J, there was a guy called Azriel that... I don't know who that guy was, but his tapes were really good. That's another guy. There's at the end of one of his tapes, he's just pounding on the drums and singing, and then like his stepdad comes in and starts yelling at him, and then he's yelling at his stepdad, and then I remember his stepdad's just like, he's like, why don't you get out of my room? And the stepdad's like, why don't you get out of this house? They're having this horrible argument, and he put it on the tape.
Yeah.
He, that guy had great songs. I was going to play a couple of Asriel songs. There's one called Paper Clipper Ships that I love, and another one called Measure.
With your sunshine eyes and fingertips, books you read and a pen to underline each fucking word with sunshine hair and fingertips, each word so important.
There was a tape that I think was on Union Pole that was, it was called Saliva. It was called This Is Saliva, and it was like two guys on a four track trying to make something that sounded like I don't know what they were trying to sound like. REO Speedwagon, or I'm not sure exactly what they were. You could tell what they were trying to do, and it was pretty hilarious because they're doing it on a four track, but they're using a synthesizer, and they've got drums and guitars and everything, and they're just making these cheesy songs. I love that tape though; it's hilarious, and some of the songs are actually pretty good too. There's one that's called Felipe's Midday Delight. All the songs have ridiculous song titles like that, but they're actually pretty good songs, but they're definitely kind of trying to be like a parody. Well, I do want to play a bunch of Caleb Frayd songs on this episode.
I especially
want to play Headache Start, Shirley Temple, which was on my Amateur Anarchy release.
Thank you. 24, close enough watching rentals wherever your life takes you. There is magic in your head. Brush me aside.
And then there's the split tape that you did with Plunder Shop, which, you know, is like my favorite. It was called Strike Anywhere, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that was, that one turned out really good.
Yeah, it's like you recorded it, so it all, there's no pause between the songs, right? It's all one long piece,
right,
but
yeah,
with the different songs.
Yeah,
and then the part, different parts come back later, and
right? A little reprise.
Yeah.
Acting.
So there's a song in there. There's the song in there. I mean, you probably remember. It's my favorite, the Slow Dance With You one.
That's weird. I was just thinking about that today, actually, because I drove by the place where I was slow dancing with that person, and I thought about that.
So I remember you did all that with a different tuning, right? And you showed me the tuning at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But so the Slow Dance With You,
down.
What's the name of the Slow Dance With You song? Is it Pre-K? There's all these. There's all the song titles, but I don't know which is which.
Oh, that's not right. Pre-K is Let the Millennium Come and Crash.
I'm
Also, I also have, there's two different songs we did. There's one song we did where you recorded the music and then I wrote lyrics called I Knew You Before. Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's another song we did where you wrote the lyrics and I took it and turned it into a song. That's Hurt Cloud. And both of those songs are awesome. And they were complete collaborations, you know?
Is it too much to ask of you? Could it be that I love you? Disappear into the night. Wouldn't that be out of sight? Taking up the sky. Too broke to be the rain. Sunshine will never last a day. Playful days are never known.
What were some of your other favorites that you can remember from the cassette label stuff?
Well, the one I love the most, obviously, is the one that I play like almost every time I play live. The Infinity is Abstract.
You still play that?
Yeah. Like it's almost embarrassing. Like when people like come up to you after your show and they go, "What's that one song you did that was really good?" And they start telling you your lyrics. I'm like,
"That's what happens."
Then I have to do it the next. Then I have to do it the next time just to see if it happens again. You know, it's happened more than once. that's probably, you know, and it's not just because I'm on your podcast, but yeah, that's probably. I don't know if I've done it on Facebook or not, where I've mentioned like my favorite song, like, and that's probably the best song I think that anyone wrote in the entire time period. Even if it's not, it's top 10.
Wow.
That song is so good. Obviously there's other great songs like Charlie songs too, you know, that, yeah. Like we used to love Liquor Store, like, you know, like crazy. If you remember that song.
Yeah.
Well, you know that one?
Well, yeah. I mean, if I had to say what were my favorite, what I think are the best songs that came out of it, obviously I would say yours, Stu. So, like, you know, Shirley Temple or that.
And folks at home, we're not just doing this because we're, you know.
No.
This is true. My songs are the best.
It is true. Well, they're going to get to hear them. They're going to see how great they are, so. But, I mean, you've put out way more songs than I ever have, that's for sure. There's a lot of songs that I've written, you know, since I stopped putting out tapes. But I'm not happy with how any of them really are recorded. And I have a lot of new songs, and, I'm always trying to make an album, but I'm never happy with how anything...
You just got to do it.
Well, you know...
You didn't like how it is abstract sounded.
I still don't. I don't like the way I sing it.
You're wrong.
I don't like my
stuff.
I do think that it's a good song, but I don't like the way I sang it.
I looked out over a cliff, and I wondered if I'll ever learn to live. I know with all my fears and doubts, I'll never figure out who I am, but I know who you are. There's no center to the universe, but I thought it'd be fun. I thought it'd be fun if I could have one. You could have been the center of it. Just a rock. Wyoming made me start to lose my faith. My newfound faith was trickling away. I welcome back my fears and doubts with open arms and ouch. Suddenly I had it figured out. Oh, there's no center to the universe, but I thought it'd be fun. I thought it'd be fun. Infinity. Thank you.
Well, you know, I have some new songs that I'm really excited about, but like I spent an entire weekend recording one song and it was all for nothing. And that's really hard. I don't have a lot of time to spend an entire weekend on something and then it's all wasted. So it's really a daunting task to try to record it.
That's the beauty of just recording and keep going. Like that's like, and you'll be surprised. Like if you like, one of the best things I got out of recording every single day was that I would like to invent something new each day. Just start from scratch and see what happens. And then if I don't achieve anything, then it's, you know, if it doesn't sound good, that's fine. We've moved on the next day. But then when you go back and you listen to some of them, you're like, oh, that sounds pretty good or decent enough. You know, I mean, and also you have to consider your audience. If you really are going for the big time, that's one thing. But if you're just like, if you got like five fans, you know, then you know, who cares? Just, I mean, it's better to have done something than, you know, for us to be waiting on a BJ Crampfer album for 20 years on Doormat.
Well, you know, I mean, it used to be where I would write the song and record it, you know, in 10 minutes. And and I remember I would come up with a chord sequence and I'd be like, all right, I get to write lyrics. I just wanted to be able to write lyrics. But that, you know, that was back when I had a lot of stuff that I wanted to write lyrics about.
you look anywhere and you find the song somewhere.
Yeah.
Like on the way home from work today, I saw some little kids out in front of the Stop and Go. This one girl was on her skateboard on her back. Just like, you know, I was thinking, man, how great is that? Just to like not have to worry about anything. Just being on your stupid skateboard in front of the Stop and Go. Remember like when you were a kid?
Yeah.
So then I went home and I had like, you know, 30 minutes before we were going out to eat. So I was like trying to make, I didn't get the lyrics all down, but I was getting there and I started recording it. And I was like, if you just keep going, you can kind of find something.
Yeah, I know, but I'm my own worst enemy because I want the lyrics to be perfect and it's really hard to get there.
That's what I mean. Like you find out later that they might be perfect if you're not trying for them to be perfect. And you're like, oh, that's pretty decent.
Well, the way it works is if you listen to music, most of the lyrics are terrible on most songs. So, you know, most people don't put a whole lot of thought into their lyrics. I mean, you could just write whatever the hell you want and sing it.
Oh yeah, no one ever cares about what you say. But I was listening to All Right Now this morning and I was thinking it was funny, like, you know, that stupid line about let's move before they raise the parking rate.
Yeah.
And then they played the whole song, went through and like he sang it again. I was thinking, you can't say it again, like in the
like, well, now they moved in case they were going to raise the park rate, but now they're in a new spot, and now they got to worry about raising the rate there. Now they got to move again.
It never ended. It kept going.
Yeah.
10 more minutes, because it's a great jam.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that episode about the cassette label scene that I was a part of in mid to late 90s. If you didn't pick up on it from the conversation, that last song that we heard, that was a song called Infinity is Abstract by yours truly, BJ Cramp. It's hard to believe, but I wrote and recorded that song almost 20 years ago now. I didn't do a great job of introducing the episode. We just kind of started right into the conversation, but hopefully you figured out that my guest was my friend Daryl, also known as Caleb Frayed. He had his own cassette label, Doormat. If you Google Caleb Frayed, Fraid, you should be able to find a lot of his music online and the address for his label, which he still tries to operate, Doormat. As you heard, he's written a lot of great songs. I played a couple of my favorites, Headache Start and Shirley Temple. I'm probably going to have Daryl back on. We kind of got cut short there. We had some more stories to tell. I'd like to play some more of his music and some other music by other cassette label artists that we didn't get to. So there will probably be a Cassette Labels 2 at some point. But here now at the end of the episode, I'm going to play another Caleb Frayed original song. This is from the first tape that he ever sent me. It was a tape he made called Daymares. And I actually covered this song for a tribute. I think he did a tribute to Texas artists. And I sent him a cover version of this song. I don't know whatever happened to that version. I think maybe it was on that cassette. I don't know if I I probably have it if I dig, but this is the original Caleb Fraid version. It's a song called Monthly Dues. And then after that, I'm going to tack on one more song by myself, BJ Cramp, another song written and recorded around the same time as that last song we heard, Infinity is Abstract. So you're going to hear Monthly Dues by Caleb Fraid and then a song called Sissy Spacek by me. Till next time.
I'll be back.